first 5 to 6 years was in footwear product design with Nike Sportswear, working across a myriad of products from lifestyle running, Air Max, Joyride, Footscape, to lifestyle basketball, Air Force One, Blazer, etc., Huarache, and then even some tennis products. So working with Roger Federer, doing some lifestyle tennis, doing some performance tennis. From there, I went to more of a creative direction team. It was a new experience, a brand new team, no footwear. It was actually setting creative direction for color across the entire Nike brand. It was called Advanced Color Concept.
Voices with value, stories with soul, tools for transformation. This is Innovation Insights. Innovate so you do not stagnate. Welcome to another episode of Innovation Insights, where we dive deep into the minds shaping the future of industries through innovation, creativity, and groundbreaking research. We believe that innovation happens in all aspects of life. I'm your host, Dr. Yolanda Sanders. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome a visionary creative, a systems thinker, and a brand storyteller, Colin Baer, the founder of the Wardrobe Theory Project. Colin is no stranger to bold beginnings. With a background rooted in both apparel design and industrial design, his journey has taken him through high-level roles at major companies like Nike and their Jordan brand, Todd Snyder, and New Balance, where he shaped consumer engagement through design, creative direction, and innovation. Now, he is channeling that expertise into his own venture, the Wardrobe Theory Project, an independent editorial platform and experimental brand dedicated to exploring personal styles, cultural, and creative significance. Based back in Iowa after more than a decade away, Colin brings a fresh lens to the Midwest's creative community. He recently launched the first issue of the Wardrobe Theory Project magazine, a beautifully curated publication at the intersection of fashion, identity, and systems thinking. As he balances fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and editorial leadership, his commitment to building something intentional and reflective is deeply inspiring. In this episode, we discuss the origin story of the Wardrobe Theory Project, how Colin defines style as a system, the realities of launching an independent magazine, and how being back in Iowa has shaped his current creative chapter. From the front lines of branding to the heart of thoughtful design, Colin shares what it means to create work that resonates deeply and slowly in today's fast-paced world. Join us as we explore creativity, identity, innovation, and the beauty of building something from the ground up. Colin, welcome to the Innovation Insights podcast. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you, Yolanda. I'm really excited to be here and chatting with you today about innovation. I'm excited to dive in.
For our audience, I've known Colin for a long time now. I mean, we haven't really been in contact lately, but when he was a student at Iowa State University, I got to know him, and I remember he was wanting to learn how to put together shoes. So I remember us having several or many sessions sitting in my office at the conference table.
Yeah.
You with shoes and fabric, and that was a fun time. It was really fun working with you during that time.
Likewise, appreciate, you know, you and the staff all fielding my crazy dreams of combining two majors and trying to do something that really been done before. So I guess the innovating started way back then.
Yeah, you were one of our first students to do a double major in apparel design and industrial design. And so it was really great and really set up a wonderful foundation for your career. So would you tell us a little bit about that career, that fabulous career that you've had?
Thank you so much. And yeah, you know, as you mentioned, started at Iowa State, and during that time got a few awesome opportunities for internship experiences. Very much consider part of the career, right? Being out in the field and getting those real experiences. So the first sort of break I caught was footwear design internship for New Balance. And that was in 2013. Lived out in the Boston area for 6 months and was fortunate to be on a small team there. So outside of my intern project, which everyone had, I actually got to design and work on shoes for market. And so it was really just thrown into the fire a little bit there, cutting my teeth with all the industry knowledge and, you know, learning just so much. The following year, went back out to the East Coast, was so fortunate to be able to intern with Todd Snyder, another Iowa State alum, Iowa native. And that was really fun in contrast because it was not in footwear design. It was in apparel. And going from a corporate place like New Balance, I'm now in a studio in Manhattan with 7 people, with 10 people in it, right? So you're getting this juxtaposition of startup mentality with all the corporate things that I learned at a place like New Balance. And coming back for my 5th year to be able to finish those 2 degrees, that allowed me to really sharpen up my portfolio, get my name out there a little bit more. The Nike role came calling in my last semester. So crazy, you know, whirlwind experience, but started full time at Nike out in Beaverton, literally 3 weeks after I walked the stage back in Ames. So I really fulfilled that dream and goal that I had getting there. And then I spent literally the last decade at Nike Inc., working across a few different roles. First 5 to 6 years was in footwear product design with Nike Sportswear, working across a myriad of products from lifestyle running, Air Max, Joyride, Footscape, to lifestyle basketball, Air Force One, Blazer, et cetera, Huarache, and then even some tennis products. So working with Roger Federer, doing some lifestyle tennis, doing some performance tennis. From there, I went to more of a creative direction team. It was a new experience, a brand new team, no footwear. It was actually setting creative direction for color across the entire Nike brand. It was called Advanced Color Concept, and got to manage people in that role, was a creative lead. And that really tested my knowledge in terms of how do you take something that is so subjective and make it objective. Right? That's where you're taking color, you're doing insights, you're doing research, and then you're communicating not only to the design teams how to inspire them, but also working with merchandising business. And how does this come to life at .com? Why does it matter to the consumer in the retail space? So that was just an awesome experience, even though I was maybe uncomfortable at first in those early moments and out of my wheelhouse. And then I went to Jordan Brand, got back into footwear, and really used the combination of all my experiences before that as I worked on the special projects team, working with collaborators and doing some of that high heat external partnerships. That being a small team, the product designer did everything. It was packaging design, color design, material design, creative direction, you know, top to bottom. So it was fun and, you know, really go get a mentality, and it's a fun place to be inside of a large corporation.
Okay, I have to ask because our audience wants to know. I'm doing this for the audience. Did you get to meet Michael Jordan?
I did not. Unfortunately not. Okay. No. And what's even maybe more ironic is the 2 times that he was actually on campus during my tenure there, I was remote for some reason. I was Zooming in or, you know, whatever it may be. And there was this secret sort of no video meeting everyone got to go to and not meet him, but see him on stage and get to experience his aura.
Yeah.
A little bittersweet, but I wasn't even on campus for those 2 times. I've certainly walked in his footsteps in the MJ building, you know, in Scotland. No way.
Yeah, it's an amazing building. I've been on the campus before you were there. And yeah, it's amazing. So wow, what really inspired you to go into fashion and industrial design and shoes? I mean, what was that inspiration for you?
Yeah, I mean, it all started with sports for me, really. Growing up in small town Iowa, fashion wasn't really thing that was talked about and celebrated, right? And so me just being in love with sports, and I think my dad being a graphic designer, I had exposure to things like illustration and art, things of that nature. And so being a 90s baby, the Bulls were my favorite team. So calling back to Michael Jordan, you'll probably see this theme a lot in my experience. But I had an uncle that lived in Chicago. I got to go to my first Bulls game when I was 5. And the Air Jordans were just going crazy at that time. I still have a pair up on the shelf of a baby pair of J's that my uncle gave me. And I think subconsciously, basketball is really where it started. I used to draw caricatures in kindergarten and obsess about, you know, their jerseys, their sweatbands, their shoes and socks. And for some reason, I was just always attracted to that. So actually playing basketball throughout my life, I then had to give that up due to sports. And footwear had kind of been that way or that vessel for me to get into sports, even though I didn't anymore. So that dream sort of came from. And I actually went to Iowa State for architecture because I didn't know about product design. I didn't know a program could get you into that industry, especially coming from Iowa. I just knew Tinker Hatfield, you know, the famous Nike designer who did all the Jordans, studied architecture and ended up doing, I'll study architecture and find a footwear job. No. Luckily, industrial design was in its first year at Iowa State when I was a freshman. So then I entered that program, and it was then in my sophomore year, first year in the program, we were in materials class learning about plastics, metals, woods, more industrial, injection molding, those sort of processes, casting, et cetera. And me being interested in footwear, I'm thinking, well, that describes half of the shoe. What about fabrics? What about the soft goods aspect of it? And that's what encouraged me to seek out, at that point, a minor, because industrial design's so wide, we were encouraged to find a minor to specify or at least have a target of what you wanted to work on. That's what led me down to LeBaron Hall and started to poke around and, oh, wow, Iowa State has a world-renowned fashion program here too. And that turned from a minor to quickly, I was thinking to myself, I need to stay here for the summer. I need to declare a second major. I need to do something that separates me from the pack coming from the small town, Iowa. If I want to make it to somewhere like Nike, how can I combine these things to set myself apart and also just learn as much as I can, because all of these processes are going to be used. So how can I really, you know, sink my teeth in and learn from that?
Well, very strategic of you.
I don't know where it came from, but I think that's where the early entrepreneurial and just approach kind of happened. I sometimes reflect on college that way where, well, kind of cliche, kind of corny, but Iowa State always talked about choose your adventure, right? That's its literal tagline. With streetwear happening and fashion barriers being broken in this time around 2010 through 2015, I'm just like, how do I bring this startup mentality to these places that are more corporate or large public university? I'm paying for my education here. How do I have a say creating what it is that I want to do? So I'm really happy again for people like yourself and faculty that were working on both sides that, you know, were a little hesitant at first, but I think I gained every word, you know, with insights. You're always thinking this way, right? Now, you know, there's a full soft goods studio and industrial design. Like, we've broken down these barriers and allowed this to happen. And I think that is inherent to creating a new and better world. Somehow I was just blessed with God leading me in that direction, you know, through my wants and needs in my school years.
Amazing. And so you brought up being entrepreneurial. So you've obviously have been that way your whole life, and now you've started the Wardrobe Theory Project. Will you tell us about that?
Totally. Absolutely. It's been quite the life shift. You know, I never thought I would be in publishing if you have to pick an industry, right? And so obviously still connected to fashion, but the Wardrobe Theory Project is an archive and analytics of personal wardrobes, is how I like to describe it, through a magazine form. So we combine systems thinking and documentation of real people's everyday clothing and celebrate, you know, the systems of people's dress and what they already own. So a typical fashion magazine will show you the latest and greatest through ads and models, basically selling you all this new stuff. I want to celebrate the clothes that are already in your closet and show the potential and the power and also the personality that those can provide, as well as inspiration.
I love it. Storytelling,
You know, in the apparel area and fashion area, we have an area called a social psychology of clothing. Mm-hmm. And what relates to that. And then also sustainability and, you know, looking at what you have. And I'm not necessarily buying something new. And how can you tell your story through that? So, you know, you're a perfect guest for Innovation Insights because we're all about, you know, professional branding. And part of that is your wardrobe. So,
yes. And that's the fun part about it. And what I started to realize is, you know, just in my free time, I'm interested in psychology. Never really, you know, I took Psych 101, didn't do too well in the lecture, but I think I've always been interested in those types of books and how people think. And as a designer, I'm always trying to learn more about not only the consumer, but just everyday people, because that's how we interact. That's how our emotions, you know, we build connections to objects, to people, to the world around us. And that was something, as I was diving into the project, made a lot of sense. Is this is part psychological analysis. This is part mindfulness. You know, you're at peace if you're reflecting and looking back and not always seeking the new. And then sustainability, obviously, if you're not buying, you're wearing everything you own, that's inherently sustainable. And then, you know, this idea of individual style or systems thinking, how everything's integrated, sort of comes from that industrial design background, but is another unique thing to sprinkle into something like fashion.
Talk to us a little bit more about your application of system thinking into this, because I think many people would be like, fashion, I never thought about fashion and system thinking. What, you know, So tell us your thoughts on that.
Absolutely. An outfit is a system, right? It's multiple individual parts working together for a common goal. That goal being to shield you from nature and clothe you in the living world, right? But then when you start to look at your whole wardrobe, you know, we have hundreds of items. And, you know, in our magazine, we focus on somebody's top 50, which is still a lot. And that's power that we're showing. But I've always viewed myself, and this is kind of a personal reflection, but even though I've been into style, and what people would say is art or fashion, I get dressed based on the weather, what activity I'm doing, like what environments am I going to be in during the day? So to that end, it's very pragmatic in my choices. And then how do I filter my personality and my community and my cultural kind of interests through those choices? And then furthermore is kind of, you know, I guess camping or packing is a good example of miniature view of a system, right? When you go on a trip, you select a set of items that you take. And through that trip, you need to use and combine those individual pieces to allow you to be in these environments, people that you're going to be with, all these different things. That's a system, but, you know, and so it's really just taking sort of that methodology that we resonate with more mechanical things or and just apply it to clothing. And so I think that's a fun way to look at it and a lot that can be explored within that.
Oh, what an excellent definition and application of a theory to a discipline that many people wouldn't think of doing that. So you said that you have whom you're featuring pick their top 50. What's that process like? Because I'm thinking, probably have way too many clothes. Yes.
Yeah.
People know that. And then, to be able to pick the top 50, how do you do that?
Well, that's a learning experience I'm going through right now. The first issue was my 50. So that was a process I had to go through. And before this became a magazine, I actually just wanted to create a coffee table book. And so I actually picked 80 of my garments. It was going to be thicker. It was going to be more in depth. I like to say favorite and or most worn. So those are really two easy props that can allow you to just, okay, what are the things you wear the most comfortable, your favorite color things? Cool. Just pull those off the rack. That's ready. Now, what are your most sentimental pieces, your favorite items that maybe you don't wear as much, but when you do, it like brings you so much joy and you can hang on to that item forever. I think those are two props to think about selecting that 50. You know, at the end of the day, this isn't, it is more of an exercise and a documentation. It's not saying, hey, you only have to wear those 50 now for the rest.
Well, hey, but
I think what helped alleviate some of the pressure to use those. What I've been experimenting with in between issues, just for social and further storytelling and content, is actually doing top 20 highlights. So as well, and this, I'm not sure when we'll release this, but this will be kind of more for social only. Right? But how do we tell more people's stories? Because we only do two issues a year. And these will be quick little bites. And it's been fun. I've documented about 3 wardrobes already. And this exercise, everyone who's dropping their clothes off, or if I go to their house to shoot them, they're like, oh, this was so fun to think about, you know? And, oh, I couldn't decide between this one. That they usually bring in 21, 22 pieces. They're like, oh, I just couldn't decide yet. So let's just shoot them, and then I'll choose at the end. But it's really fun to hear people's reactions and how it's getting them to think about their wardrobe, because we don't do that.
It's small.
Well, as a true entrepreneur and an innovator, it sounds like you made a pivot here, because you mentioned that you initially was going to do a book.
Yeah.
And then it changed into a magazine. Why and how?
It's really, I think they were all part of the vision originally. And my initial thought was to lead with book, so I could tell the story and the complex idea of all of these things through my wardrobe, be sort of the concept car that leads that. And then the publication would come after, where we could then take this framework and apply it and showcase other people. And to be frank, it was really just about what's possible, you know, being an independent publishing or publisher. You know, we're funding it ourselves, and books are expensive to make. And so for making a 300 plus page hardcover coffee table book, it was just a design dream project that I wanted to do, but I didn't really have the means to do that. And especially starting from zero, I also didn't have following or a fan base to get scale, which would actually make that beneficial or useful. So that's where made sense to just start with the publication. How do we simplify the idea, build the framework? You can still, you know, I can lead with my story because it's just the easiest way to move forward. And then we can start to use this platform and this publication to tell anybody's stories. It was actually during the photo shoot of my original garments that this idea kind of came to me. You know, publication was kind of floating around, but it was when my friend and I were actually shooting my pieces. It was a fun weekend. He came over a couple of days in a row. We had music on and just, you know, shooting my garments. And it felt like, wow, we can do this with anybody who wears clothes. That's where the idea of scale repeated as, again, framework and a system creating, and then stories that you're putting into it that give it life. And how does the system react to the input? You know, what's that? That's where the publication idea really just took hold. And like, I realized that's what we need to focus on. And I have history and also typically lean to trying to do too much. And so doing the book, doing the publication, doing the website, doing an app, all these things are coming to me as ideas. But if I've learned anything in life, it's how, if we could just do one thing and do it great and do it right, that will then allow the path to do these other things. So every day a battle to just like do the small steps, get this thing off the ground and do what we can with it.
I hear you. Also, yes, the DNA of a true innovator. What? Do it all. I understand.
Yeah.
Well, so for people that haven't seen your publication, how are the garments photographed? Are they photographed on the person or are they flat?
They're shot archival style. So all white background, front and back view. And then we have a detail ISO shot, right? And so that was strategically that way because it felt reminiscent I guess, of archives, right? You're shooting this kind of lineage of these items that have been in existence, and they're worn garments, right? So they have patina, they have wear and tear. But then on the flip side, it also is kind of a juxtaposition of a brand new catalog or a lookbook that is selling you a new collection, right? And that's where that juxtaposition happens is, no, these are actually all old garments. And so shooting them on high quality paper, high quality cameras, high quality lighting is again, further element of storytelling and message that we're trying to communicate. These still have value and a lot of miles left to be lived in them. And so we're treating it just like any brand would shoot a new collection every season. We're just shooting from your closet. And I think like a fun tension point narrative to bring into today's fashion landscape.
So when you arrive at someone's home to do it there, I mean, you bring your own equipment, and what's that process like?
Yeah, definitely. So I have basically a rig that I set up. It's, you know, a car full of stuff. We've got box lights. We've got, you know, umbrella lights. We've got this big kind of, you know, these pillars, these C stands essentially that come out. I can hang the camera straight down so we can do our consistent wavelength shots. And then a backdrop of a white cloth that then we lay out and allows our back. And yeah, I need a plug-in, right? So I bring some extension cords and we just get cooking. So the last person's house I visited, we moved her couch and we just used her living room. And local people here in Des Moines who are my friends who live nearby, I have a room set up in our house upstairs that I basically have all that stuff set up and I can shoot 2 hours, 20 items. The 50 takes a little bit longer, but the idea is that then we're mobile and we can go meet these people where they're, instead of having to rent these big, fancy, expensive studios that brands would have to rent to showcase it. So that is the methodology of our approach too. And one thing I'll have to figure out once we start to expand is how much is it going to cost to check all that luggage to a flight or we'll cross that bridge gets here. But I think that idea of mobility, also the sort of, if we're shooting in the person's living quarters, that's inherently part of their system of life.
Yeah.
You get some BTS shots, or if we get that portrait of them there for an intro page, it's
current environment.
And it is almost the creative direction already, just giving and breathing life into the system, the framework.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a big part of the story, the environment that they're living in, their closet.
Yeah.
Well, you know, as I'm thinking here, I have a request. I am fascinated with Deion Sanders, the relation.
Yeah.
So I have a request for you to see, because I would love, you know, because I know he's very particular about his clothing and he lays it out every day before, you know, you know, or the night before or something, but he very much plans out his wardrobe.
Yeah.
So I just putting him on the list for you. So, you know, when you said, you know, having to fly someplace, when you fly out to Denver and then, you know, transport over to Boulder.
Yeah. My ears are open. You know, if Deion wants to open his living room up in his closet, I'm there. You know, those are the types of people that I would love to showcase and highlight, and especially those that which have a methodology to their madness, their system, right? That's how we're sort of identifying it. So yeah, if you have a let me move.
I don't yet. I keep throwing his name out there all over the place, hoping that it get his attention.
Yeah.
Well, so what has been the challenges in building your own platform from scratch, especially in a whole different industry for you, publishing? What has that been like?
Yeah, it's been a lot of learning and humbling experiences for sure. But like the tenacity of just that I am learning every day, and something that may not go right can be remedied or it can be fixed, and just continuing on that process and knowing tomorrow can be a little bit better. I think the biggest, the process and the startup has been less I mean, it's been challenging for sure, but when I approach it with my entrepreneurial and design mindset, it's just a problem that I need to solve. Not me going through it. Sure, I'm not the best at websites and Shopify and backend email automations and all this marketing stuff. And it's really just time. That time is the, when you're the only person working on it, time is one of the biggest challenges because you have this high level of expectation that you want across everything. But on the other end, I would really just say getting that word out there. We don't have a marketing budget. We don't have these big platforms and these big followings yet. So trying to keep myself patient and know that the idea is valuable and we're just at the beginning. You know, we don't need to hit a million or thousands right away, and being patient with that and knowing, not getting discouraged when the growth isn't hitting the metrics I want them to or as quick as I want them to, is really keeping the head down, know that it's a long, long haul. Over this first year or two, plus, minus, we'll see. And knowing that that'll come with time. And that's also really the trade-off to have an authentic growth and an authentic following. Because as much as I want all the subscribers right now and funds to be able to do what I want and hire help, you know, to join me in the studio, I also want a loyal following, and I don't want to hit a peak right away and then have it just disintegrate. I want people who are subscribing to really be interested in this, and I want them to stick around for forever. So I think just patience and then keeping my head up through those up and downs.
Amen. I'm with you. You know, as a startup too, I absolutely hear what you're saying. And like you said, that slow growth and followers, supporters, people that are engaging, that are truly interested. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it is just a really cool project. And yeah, so, you know, you've gone from corporate, you moved back to Iowa. How have you used your experiences to approach this as a founder? And then also, why did you choose to come back to Iowa?
Yeah.
To do that.
Absolutely. I'll start with the Iowa part. It's funny because I always spent my life running away from it. I wanted to go to the big cities, as I mentioned earlier, Boston, studying abroad in London, New York, Portland, LA, the coasts. Those are where all the big brands are. So growing up here, wanting to be in that industry, that's where you just feel like you have to go to participate in that. Meeting my wife on the West Coast, who's from Portland, we actually aligned on that when we first met. We were like, oh, you don't want to move to Iowa either? Cool, check, we're aligned. That was 8 years ago now. And so it's funny how life just changes. You know, she spent a decade in the footwear industry, and I came up on a decade in the footwear industry. And not that we want to leave it forever, but it really felt like that point was either we're going to sink in further and our heels in and not leave and just keep this as like the life thing and start a family out here, or this is the time now before we have kids and everything to start these entrepreneurial dreams that you have while you still have a little bit of energy and, you know, that gumption that you have. So that kind of foresight and really just life changes ultimately, I would say. And with my family being back here, my wife stepping away from her career, it just made sense from cost of living being a little cheaper, being close to my family after a decade again. And we just welcomed a baby girl 3 months ago into the world. So Iowa sort of just checked all those boxes in terms of the life we were looking for at this point. And it also felt like a quiet place where there was an untapped area that I could come back with my expertise and at least plant my feet and help grow something from this. And to your corporate part, I have that network. I have a decade of global connections with technology. We're talking on video right now. I know we're both in Iowa, but this could easily be a different country. And so knowing that I can still be in touch with my friends in London, my friends in New York, my friends in Asia, my friends in Portland from here really helps that transition out too. And I think what I've taken from my experience additionally and tried to apply my methodology as a founder is really empathy to all of the inputs that are needed to run a business. So at corporate, you have a singular role, right? A title. You work in a cross-functional matrix with a lot of people to complete huge tasks, right? These large companies like Nike, et cetera, they produce jaw-dropping content and work because of how many people are unified to work on one thing. Sells itself, right? It's amazing and it's inspiring and it's really cool. And I think I was successful in corporate because of my empathy towards the collaborators and the roles I was working with. The engineer or the developer or the marketing person, the, you know, the cost analyst that I'm working with, my project benefited because I knew that they had expertise that I didn't. And if I could collaborate with them and they actually enjoyed working with me, this is going to go better than if I'm bashing heads. You know, challenging has its place. And, you know, to get to a new place, you know, it's important to inspire others and bring up thought-provoking questions and pathways. But if you can't do that with empathy and understanding the work and the challenge it's going to cause for this person, that's where that disconnect can happen. So I'm trying to take that now into a founder approach. The vendors I'm working with, the photographers I'm working with, the writers I'm working with. Yes, I have my point of view and my vision for this, but if people don't want to work with me, then it's not going to be as big or as good as I want it to be on my own. So the empathy is a really big kind of focused on most of my career, and now I'm trying to take to the entrepreneurial space as well.
It's interesting that you say that, because empathy has been a common theme across the podcast. And I'm working on some series because I, you know, another one of my nine lives as a researcher is looking at qualitative data and stories, basically, and narrative analysis. And so I've started some of that analysis. And, you know, and just, you know, as people, if they listen to our episodes, they'll hear that, yeah, empathy comes up a lot. And I think it's something that, again, no one would put together with innovation.
It's interesting that you say, because I think that is one of the things that gets lost in all of our training as designers in the culture and the world of today, because it's all, you know, how are you a go-getter? How are you driving your vision? How are you influencing others to do what you want to do and what your ideas are, converting people to your views and all these things? But when you go back, and this is kind of the research aspect of the methodology I'm trying to apply to fashion in the magazine and applying design thinking to fashion communication. When you break down, if you look up design thinking, IDEO, Fraud Design, all of these corporations, Apple, that have used this methodology, create Stanford D-School as another example. Yeah. Empathizing with the user is one of the first and largest portions of the process. Before you get to sketching, before you get to a mood board, before you get to creative direction, you need to live that daily life of that person that you're designing for. And that's why I like to use person instead of consumer, because that's where we've, you know, gotten to at today's day and age. It's because we're designing at such a pace for growth and for all these reasons outside of providing for the user. We just want them to buy more stuff. And that's where the empathy aspect has really lost its course, I think, in design and the service industry, all of these things.
I agree. And it's so funny that you mentioned IDEO and, you know, Tim Blanks and all of, you know, that. Because I used to teach a doctoral level design class, and that was one of the frameworks. We read a lot of frameworks, but that was one that we read in that class, because you do have to put the person first in their needs. So what can we expect in the upcoming issues of the Wardrobe Theory Project?
The upcoming issues are really just going to be more stories that I'm really excited to share, right? The first issue is really a grounding launch pad. This is what the project is. This was the backstory, the origin story of what led to it. And a lot of the touch points in that, including the wardrobe, are around my process and around setting the framework example. And so I'm excited to kind of take more and more of a back seat. Obviously, you'll get the editor's letter from me, each or the editor's note at the start of each magazine, but I'm excited to have this framework feature more varied stories of other people. So that's what you can expect in this next issue. What follows that as well for the ensuing issues. And then other things we're focused on right now are really participating in events. Something I didn't think about much. You know, I wanted to be in my studio, not go out in the world, just design and make stuff. And what I realized through our two events we had for the launch, we had a pop-up in Portland at an awesome, cool bookstore and shop. Then here at one of the vintage stores that we featured in the first issue, we had a launch party. And the energy, people that came out to those events, and those are the two single days that we've had the most growth as well, because people can look at the issues, they can see them in person, they can talk and learn more about it. And so I think having a real life engagement at different various places is important too. So actually, after this weekend, we have four straight weekends of events coming up that are pretty busy, to say the least. But next weekend, we'll be in Omaha partnering with kind of an elevated menswear store and doing a talking event. So I'm going to give a talk kind of like this that will help Q&A, but basically just telling that origin story, the framework, the background of the project. We're partnering with a distillery, so it'll be kind of an RSVP only whiskey tasting and close conversation.
Really cool.
Following that, we're actually going to be a Principal Charity Classic here in Des Moines. Mm-hmm. The PGA Golf Tour, but they have really some of their pillars values are in sustainability. So Mid-American Energy has what they call a sustainability grove. And we've been asked to have an activation tent as part of that sustainability grove. So what you might typically see there, energy, solar, you know, all these other things are going to be there as talking about clothes and fashion, which relates to golf actually in today's day. So really, and then lastly, there's going to be a big group of programming here in Des Moines called DSM Flea that basically brings all the vintage shops and collectors together as these big, they're having their 1 year anniversary about a month from now. And then we're going to get to have a table at that activation.
Yeah.
Oh, that'll be cool.
Yeah. I'm rambling a little bit on this, but another thing I'm glad about is our more collaborations. These are really early in conversation right now, but we have had a couple of retailers who are actually interested in how do we work with you with your design background to create upcycled limited edition capsules from our excess inventory from the floors.
Me too.
That obviously had me chomping at the bit for my design. It's still very early in those conversations, but that with events, consulting and all these other things are ways hopefully WTP as a studio and as a publication can really broaden its reach, further tell that story and that methodology outside of just print.
I love it. And I've been following you on social media, I think on Instagram, and you could feel the energy from the photos of the events that you did have. I was looking at photos from both of them and I was like, this is just really cool. Let me get a hold of him and get him on the podcast because he is a storyteller.
Trying to be. Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm glad that energy is coming through. Just massive shout out to the photographers I'm working with, anybody who's helping contribute to that, because those are things that go outside of my expertise there.
Can do, but
yeah. Well, you can tell you have a great team around you and great collaborators, and so just keep it up. Well, what advice would you give to young or old creatives or any creative or designer that wants to build something on their own terms?
Great question. two things come to mind for me. One is, don't be afraid to be an outsider like I am with publishing. That's not, I don't go to school for journalism or writing or any of these things. So don't be afraid to be an outsider. But I think I say that with a caveat of, that doesn't mean don't do your research, right? I could, I have sort of bridged these gaps, but I truly feel like an outsider to publishing. I think that's the innovative mindset and point of view that I'm bringing to this space. But I've always been adjacent to it, whether just by interest or by way of being in fashion. You know, I've been designing for the industry. So obviously I'm a fan of the media, how our things get shared. And I've always loved print and magazines and books. And you know, you can see the full stats of things behind me. And so I've always, not a connoisseur, but I've always been intrigued and interested in it. So in that way, it's almost been 10 to 12 years of just observing and being in tune with some way or somehow. So by that, do your research, learn as much as you can so it's informed, but then don't be afraid to bring your outside perspective to this new space, whatever it may be, to make innovations happen. Try to create space for new things.
Well, I have another question that came up because you're talking about learning. And I know that we're, you know, getting close to the end here, but artificial intelligence, tell me your thoughts on that, because I am diving into it every day, learning as much as I can. I'm trying to learn
coding.
I know a little coding. I'm trying to vibe code. I'm trying to build agents. I'm trying to operationalize everything because, yeah, being me doing the primary, most of the work.
Totally. Great question. And it's interesting. I've had quite the journey with it because as a product designer, it comes into these corporations and everyone at the ground level can now make the fanciest renderings of products and all these things. And there is a big debate, especially within art and design, of, oh, I can just reference everything, create. I think that's what we do as humans, right? We do research, we get inspired, and then we create based on the things that we've seen, try to create new. But my only hesitancy with it in that aspect was, me in footwear, humans are still building that product. So if we can't make it outside of an inspiration, what are the real tools? There's obviously merit for it. I have learned specifically with ChatGPT, it's just such a good assistant and thought partner where I can give it a prompt. I rarely will use it to just like give me ideas. I'll say, I'll more so, hey, here's the thing I'm thinking about. This is my point of view. Now, what am I missing? Or can you give me sources? Or, you know, how are you just being quicker with something that might take me a whole week to research? I can find information on that quicker. And also with, you know, just admin tasks, things like emails and organizing. And again, using that prompt that's coming from me as a human, hey, I've written this paragraph already. I'm not saying write the whole thing from scratch. Can you proofread it for me really quick? Can you suggest an that might make it sound less personal and more professional? And so again, with me having such a love of craft and the human psyche and art, I try to always embed that human element to it. But I think be short-sighted to not see it as a tool be used to better our world. So it's tricky for sure. And I think in the wrong hands, obviously anything in the wrong hands can go awry, but I'm definitely on board with trying to learn and use it more. You mentioned coding. That's something I actually need to do more with because, you know, I don't have budget to keep going to my website team to like do these new big things. So how can I help that code integrate some of these ideas, interactivity on my website, these ambitions that I have. So definitely a tool that I'm continuing to use more and more.
Well, it's definitely an exciting time for startups to be able to have these tools because you're able to do things. I mean, I've had startup businesses, oh my gosh, like 30 some years, you know, different businesses. And it this time it's different because I am able to do so much more that I was not able to do in the past. So
contracts. That's a great way, you know, for me, all the contracts that I'm a part of, I try to sit down and read. And if I need legal advice, I'll go get that. But talk about at least giving you a framework, an outline, a bullet point.
Yeah.
Here, don't forget to mention this, right? And, oh, hey, that's an interesting point. What it means for you, of this verbiage and amendment. So that's the space where it's really been helping me a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep, the podcast agreement form. ChatGPT and I did that.
Your legal research right there, you know?
Yeah. Oh, well, as we wrap this up, the last question I ask every guest is, how do you define innovation?
I've been thinking about this for the past few days since our last connect. Yeah. The same thing kind of keeps popping into my head, and it really comes back to what we mentioned or alluded to earlier with the user, the person. I think innovation is really creating something that benefits and enhances somebody's day-to-day life or their experience with something. And a lot of ways for me, how I view that is a new system or a new framework or a new ecosystem, right? That's true innovation to me. What I think we are so used to, and marketing, it's been its favorite word. The marketing's favorite two words in the last decade have been innovation and sustainability. And we are far from that with all the products that are coming out. And there's a really good book. I think it's called Zero to One. Peter Thiel, maybe. It's been a few years since I've read it, but in this book, he lays out lateral innovation, vertical innovation. Lateral innovation is what we're so used to. It's three cameras on your phone instead of two. It's a new finish in your car. It's a new Bluetooth connection here that wasn't in last year's model, but it's now in this one. It's this segmentation way of growing and consistently expanding your business, but it's not really changing your day-to-day life or, you know, you got seat warmers now in your car. Like, that's great. That's cool. But it's not really affecting systems change and greater change. Whereas something that I hope we can do with this magazine and this platform is create a new circular ecosystem from tailors, cobblers, you know, secondhand sellers, reusing your clothing. Like this, the way we operate our business, subscription based, will allow us eventually to not overproduce. We have no ads. Like thinking of that whole system in this industry as a new thing is where I see innovation and how I think I just define innovation.
Thank you. That was beautiful.
Thank you.
I just enjoyed having you here. Thank you for joining us. And I will invite you back because it will just be fun to see this evolve and grow with your vision and energy. And it's really going to be fun. So thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Yolanda. Really appreciate the opportunity. Love what you're doing with Innovation Insights and all the stories. Yeah, you know, experiences you're able to share with others. And hopefully someone can use this as a tool for inspiration or learn, you know, within their own journey. Keep doing the great work. And again, thank you for your interest, you know, offering up your platform to share my endeavors over here.
Well, and if someone wants to get a hold of you, the best place is the wardrobetheoryproject.com. Is that the best?
Yep. Wardrobetheoryproject.com. On there, you can find a contact to reach out. hello@wardrobetheory.com. That would be sort of our general email, or you can find me at colin@wardrobetheory.com as well. So I'll see any of those things as I'm running all of that.
Cool.
Yeah. Please.
We'll make sure that everything is fit into the show notes too.
Cool. Wonderful.
Well, to our audience, if you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, leave a comment. and share it with your network. Your support helps us to continue to bring powerful conversations like this to the forefront. Thank you for tuning in. Keep innovating, keep dreaming, and keep making a difference.